Chillax, a podcast where you listen to this our boy talk about life, news, and anything interesting. You can listen to this while you're working, while you're studying, or while you're falling asleep. And just to let all of y'all know, we have a Patreon page where y'all can support the podcast. And, you know, supporters get an extra episode per month. And just to, I don't know, to thank all of y'all for the support. And for those who do not have the means to support, it's completely fine. This podcast is meant to be free. And just for an outlet for me to talk and provide some sort of companionship and, I don't know, white noise, I guess. And today we're going to be talking about saving money and investing as a dummy. I won't be giving any kind of financial advice. I'm just going to be talking about my own experience. I'm far from a financial expert. I suck at finance subjects in uni, but I guess in some sense, in some way or another, as an adult, once you become an adult, finances become a thing that we need to think about, right? And of course, as a very lazy person, I try not to think about it as much as possible. If I can, I would just save money and not do anything. But sometimes, based on what I hear and what I see, saving money might not be enough, which is the problem. I don't think it's a problem, which is the case, I guess. I think that's the best way to put it, which, like that law, like, you have to do something about it. I mean, I have little knowledge on how does the whole inflation thing work, but I know that inflation happens. Things become more and more expensive over time. Then as a result, if you store your money in your bank, the bank doesn't give you enough interest rate to combat the rising inflation rates, right? Hence, you need to put your money in some sort of investments, some sort of stocks or bonds or whatever not. And that's the case. And of course, my financial advice from young until now is purely from my smarter friends who invest and also from what the internet says. I mean, of course, I also have to think about it logically and I need to be rational about this. I mean, because it's money, right? I'm a very frugal person. I don't want to lose all my money. I don't want to take on any risk at all. I hope that I wish, but that's not the case. Sometimes you have to take on risk. So early on, right, I knew that depositing money is like not that great. Saving it in bank is not that great. And seeing my parents, they do not have any financial knowledge, any kind of planning, because my parents are the typical traditional parents. They do menial labor, blue collar work, where they are not very smart, like secondary school, primary school education, where all they know is to save money, and then save money, then they use the money to provide for their child, right? And in this case, there was no insurance, there's no investing at all. Hence, you know, for me, I felt that it was important for me to think about the long term, and me as an educated person, I should try my best to do what I can do with my money, to generate as much earnings as possible with my money, right? And you know, it was around 2018, I got quite serious into finding out about investing, because I think for those who have listened to the episode about being poor and being frugal, at the beginning, I think my family wasn't very well off. We are all very poor, and during the 2008 recession, we have to go. At the start selling ice cream, my father just didn't have any jobs to do because it's a blue collar work, like blue collar labor. Then he do metal work. And then at that time, when the economy recession or whatever it is, there wasn't any jobs at all. Then we have to, like, he had to sell ice cream and all these things. And I just didn't really have much money. And throughout my whole primary school, secondary school, my pocket money hasn't always been up to par, I suppose. It's not even the average of the pocket money that people have. I'm probably at the lowest. So it's very hard when people, it's pretty common primary school or secondary school where after school you'll go have fast food, right? And then fast food usually costs about $4.50, $5. Then for me, I couldn't even afford that because all my pocket money is just $5. Then if I have my canteen break, then what do I do now? So there's a part about being left out, and at the same time, I had to borrow money just to buy fast food and enjoy with my friends and not be left out, which was a very, very, I don't know, tough time. I mean, as much as y'all can see from the outs, like, from your end, you will see, it's just fast food. It's just, it's so insignificant, this kind of event. But I think as a child, as a teenager, that was everything, right? If you think about it. Your looks were everything. You were so concerned about your looks. You were so concerned about how you behave, whether you look cool or not. And that was very important. Just the whole having friends, socializing part, and being involved. And that was so important that, I don't know, it just left an impression on me where where I just felt like I want to save money as much as possible. I don't want to be in a position where I want to borrow money again from people, where I need to be in the awkward situation with people, and where people can kind of like, I don't know, toy around with me, because you know they have money, then they borrow me money, then they can be an asshole about it, which some of my friends did, which was really, which I'm no longer friends with them anymore. But those who were lending me money, like we and they were not an ass about it, and you know, we are still friends to this day, because we are kind of both in the same situation. But I have a friend who just had slightly more money, slightly more pocket money, where he can just lend me. But that was nice. And I think this really stuck with me. And then after I finished my O levels, I started working part time, because after the O levels, that whole stretch of break, I think it's 6 months holiday if I'm not wrong, where you are just doing nothing, where you're just waiting for results and you're applying poly, JC, yeah. Yes, poly or JC. Then that's a part where, I mean, typically people will go and find work, and my parents just wanted me to get a part-time work. So I do my part-time work, then I started saving all my money. Then I really saved, I think maybe in the first month or 2 months, I just spent all of my money away, because I never had so much money before, and I just spent everything. But eventually I just started saving everything, because there was nothing to buy, to be honest. Everything that I bought didn't really make me happy at all. So I just keep saving. I hardly go and drink, then I keep saving. Then once I reach uni, which is around the 2018, I have like this pool of 10-20k where it's just sitting there. Then I'm just like thinking, it's going to waste, man. It's going to waste. And around this time, right, where I start to meet people, you know, different friends from different courses, where my friends who are in finance, accounting, they actually do some investing. Then that kind of piqued my interest, right? And I was reading so much news about like all these financial news, money, I don't know, a work salary man, Seedly, all this kind of typical Singapore finance advice websites. So I kind of picked up things here and there. Then when I saw that I have so much money, I probably should be investing. But at the end of the day, I was also lazy in this case. I couldn't be like my friends. My friends, like, they invested, they go and pick their stocks. They were very savvy. They did their research. They went to do all the what value analysis. They tried to pick like undervalued stock where the price is cheaper than how much the company should be valued at. I don't know how that works. I suppose they look at the P&L, like the profit and loss, their business, their annual report. Then they kind of make a evaluation on that, and they hold the stocks. But then of course I have friends as well who are not so savvy, and they just wanted to invest, so to speak, because now it's very cool, right, with all the crypto stuff. They just want to invest, and then they just randomly pick stocks. They try their best to understand how the company works, try to evaluate the company. But you know, some of them end up losing money. So you know, from that end, I know that I'm a lazy person. I have zero knowledge. I have zero interest in learning about evaluating companies. I know. But it's like my friends who have managed to evaluate all these companies, they managed to do quite well. Like, I mean, of course, they can't beat the stock market or what, like sometimes they can't be, but I feel that most of the people I speak to, who I would assume was saying the truth, are earning much more than your typical market growth, I suppose, because they might have some experience actually, and then for me, I just weren't interested in doing all these things. I rather do learn and do things that I'm interested in, and yeah, it's very hard for me to want to learn things that I have barely any interest in, but I know that I have to do it. So in this case, it was just finding the best option where that fits my needs in this case. And I was seeing a lot of articles, you know, on ETF, which is exchange traded fund. So usually they are like a pool of stocks that a company or fund manager kind of, they pick all these stocks and then they combine it together to become a fund. So they have like several stocks, so it's like diversified. I suppose it's less risky. Then they kind of follow a certain kind of condition or situation. So most of the exchange traded fund that I know of is they follow the local market. So you have your S&P 500, which is your US kind of exchange traded fund, where they follow the, I think if I'm not wrong, the top 500 companies in US. So you can see that they kind of encapsulates the market's growth or something. And then you have the Singapore STI, which is the Straits Times Index, which is the top, I think 50 or 100 companies in Singapore, which is all the blue chip stocks. And it also follows the market trend, where you are just buying how much the market is growing. And usually, if you see over a 5 to 10 years kind of scenario, it always goes up. So essentially, right, you buy ETF, the logic is that you keep buying and then you hold it for 5 to 10 over years, so that you can ride out the economy, ride out the ups and downs, and then you just ride the growth, the market growth, all the way to the 8%. So generally, like the growth rate is about I think 5 to 8%, that kind of around that region. Then of course there's the dividends that are included and all these things. So that is pretty nice. And I think if I'm not wrong, the STI Singapore's index fund is about 7%, and then the dividends payout is 0.03%. I forgot what was it again really. 3%? Let me just do a quick search, okay? Bear with me for a moment. This is my first time doing a quick search. STI ETF dividends. It's about 1.52%, if I'm not wrong. Oh, no. 3.6%. While the STI pays a dividend yield of 3.6. Yes, correct. So it's about 3%, I suppose. So which is 0.03, I guess. Yeah. So about 3%, and then the payout is split between two times a year. So I think one is at January, one is at July, which is first half and second half. And then so that's good lah. I suppose you get the dividends, and of course at the end of the day you can start selling it 10 years down the road. Then you get the 7% growth, which is something that the bank cannot afford you, and because the bank doesn't give you barely any interest, and it kind of beats the CPF as well. But CPF is still good, having 4%, which is, if I'm not wrong, it's 4%, which is somewhat more of the higher ones, where nobody is going to give you 4% for parking money in some space, right? And then that's why the government, give us that kind of benefit. Then of course it also beats the whatever crap that the insurance agent says. I mean, of course I wouldn't say I'm an expert here. I've listened to some of my insurance acquaintance talk about their whatever investment plan, which absolutely ridiculous. When you kind of, even if you are not a financial expert, right, when they say about they can get you 7-8%, then you start asking questions, right, poking holes at it, then they can't give you a straight answer, because they say, oh, these are the potential earnings, but is it guaranteed? We never know. But of course you can say for the ETF, the Straits Times Index, also it's not guaranteed, right, my 7-8%. But then the ETF, right, in some ways you have a lot of research and it's like kind of proven to some extent where the growth, if you ride it out long enough, it's gonna be a stock that can return you that kind of money, and you still get dividends, you know. Then you have this insurance kind of plan where there's so much terms and condition where you are not quite sure where they are going to give you dividend. I mean, they might give you dividend. Will they guarantee your capital? You never know, right? I mean, they say they'll guarantee your capital, but how much earnings are you going to get from that? It's like you're signing a plan where you have no idea what it's all about. But at least ETF, to some extent, from my perspective, is that you have a lot of articles, a lot of financial advisors already say that it is the better way to go, where instead of picking stocks and instead of going for investment in whatever insurance investment plans, because this one people have already been doing it for so long, where they are investing it over 10 years. Even have like Warren Buffett that they actually do a competition, a research. I think it was a very formalized competition where like Warren Buffett pit ETFs against a fund manager's stock picking like kind of capabilities. So he invested like 1 million into ETFs, then the fund managers also invested 1 million into his own stock picking kind of thing. So choosing stocks versus ETF. Then eventually after 10 years, right, the ETF surpassed the fund manager, because most of the time the fund managers, I think there was a statistic that said that about 80% of the fund managers, their earnings, right, is less than the market rate, which is about 7-8%. Then only like the top 20% manage to get above market rate. But then when you are doing above market rate, there needs to be, I mean, the barrier to entry is very hard already, right? Like it's not like you can go and find these people and they will invest for you, and there's a lot of insider knowledge kind of thing going on, right? But then as a common consumer, ETFs is definitely the way to go, because it's much better than the guy with knowledge picking stocks, and he can still lose. And my friend, who are the very savvy people, they also understand that, so I just ask them, why do you pick individual stocks when you know that like there's a chance that you will still lose? But then it's like, I suppose it's kind of like it's exciting when you pick the right ones, when you evaluate correctly and all these things, so you never know. Yeah, hence I just go with ETF. I mean, ETF is kind of shown and it's proven, but you never know, right? The past performance doesn't mean that like in the future it would happen, but you kind of see the trend goes that way, where it will grow over time and it's pretty stable because it's diversified. So that's my, based on my knowledge, and the way it is I just went ahead with it. I felt that was the best way to go, and I didn't really want to go through the stress of picking my stocks, because I can see some of my friends getting very stressed out. Those who are not savvy at all, then they buy crypto, they pick individual stocks. Then, they are all kind of in a very interesting mindset where they want to buy and they want to sell short term. Then they want to earn money. But then when you buy and you want to sell short term, then you are so concerned and stressed out over the index, the price index. It goes up, goes down, goes up, goes down. Then it's like, what the heck? So stressful. Like I can't stand it, I can't stand it. I can't stand that stressfulness that you keep on checking. And it's like, you check also doesn't do anything. Like the economy crash then crash, like you have no control over it, you have zero control. And that's the worst part, where I don't want to be feeling the kind of stress where you have no control over. Hence, ETF is what I invested in, which is the Singapore Index Fund, the SCI ETF, where it kind of follows the market growth. And what I use to invest, like what kind of platforms? It seems like all the local banks have something like that, where they can let you invest with small denomination, small amounts of money per month in this index fund. And of course, then you have the other option where you can have your own, I think CDP, or essentially it's like your own trading. You can just go to one of the bank's trading platform and then you can buy index fund as well. But that one requires a huge, I think it has a huge barrier to entry. can't just buy $100. You have to buy one lot, which is dictated by the whatever the company or whatever it is, whichever institution, where you have to sometimes you have to pay like 1,000 at one go, which is impossible lah. I mean, I'm not rich, but right, I have like very little money. Hence, the regular savings plan from DBS was the best way to go. So I think it comes under different names for different banks, but the regular savings plan is sounds a bit like the insurance plan, right? But actually it's not. It's essentially, it's just a name to kind of describe, I don't know, it's just a name for that thing where you are just buying the STI ETF monthly, and then it has a minimum how much you have to spend, which is $100 only. Then yeah, you can invest $100 per month. So once you kind of activate it, like you turn on the plan, then you put in how much money you want to you indicate how much money you want to put in, then every month they will charge you, and then they will buy that amount of stocks. So in this case, this is a very low entry level kind of thing, low barrier to entry, which is nice. I mean, you can redeem, you can sell these stocks anytime you want, and you can adjust the amount of stocks you want to buy anytime you want as well. So that's a good part. I can just liquidate whenever I want. But of course, I'm not going to just sell it. I'm going to be holding it for 10 years and even more than that. Yeah, so essentially that the good part about it is because you are buying the stocks monthly. So essentially what you're doing is what they call a dollar cost averaging, which means that when the price is low, right, you're buying more stocks. So when the stock price is low, you're buying more stocks because you're like always paying the same amount, right? 500 per month, example. When the stock's price goes low, you're buying more. When the stock's price goes higher, then you're buying lesser. So it kind of averages out over time. And then instead of timing the market where it's another point of stressor where you have to think, is this going down? Is this going to continue going down? Why is this going up? It's expensive. I can't buy this. I need to wait. Then you're trying to time the market, but you have no knowledge how to time the market. And even if you have the knowledge, you still cannot predict everything, right? So it's a huge point of, I don't know, it's just very stressful again. Hence, the point of the dollar cost averaging is that you keep putting in money over time and it averages out the cost. And then, I mean, of course, you're not going in at the lowest, but eventually it averages out. So you have a kind of a nice margin where once the stocks will keep on growing, right? I mean, it follows the market. Then once it keeps growing, eventually it will kind of surpass the average price that you buy at. Wait, the average price you buy at, yeah. So that's the whole logic of it. And I mean, that's probably the best part, right? You just choose the price and then you just pay every month. And then right now, my situation is that I've been doing it since 2018. Then so far I see like the growth rate is about 5%, I think, which is not bad. I mean, the dollar cost averaging seems to be working. When the economy kind of crashed, when the COVID thing happened, I managed to buy more. Then when 2018, the stock prices was so high and I managed to buy less. So it kind of evens out over time. But then if you look at the situation now, I'm still earning by about 5%, which is great. And then on top of the 5%, I also have my dividends. But then this 5% is not really actualized kind of earning, where I haven't sold it yet. So that means I haven't profit from it yet. But that's not the plan. I mean, for me, right, the plan is very simple, which is to keep saving, save until the point where I can actually get enough dividends so I can live by the dividends. I'm not quite sure when I will get there, but it will take time. Right now, the amount of dividends I get, like, I mean, payout is twice per year, right? Then it's 3%. My payout per half of the year is about 200 plus. So that is not too bad. So let's say you 200 plus per half, right? Means total I get about 400. Then 400, right? 400, I can, so the plan is that, right, I want to combine this together, I split into 12 months, I want to at least get 500 per month. So it's 12 times 5, it's how much? I can't count, but I want to be able to get at least minimally 500 per month. So 500 per month is enough for my living expenses. So once I have that amount of funds that can give me 500 per month, right, I can just live off that. I mean, then I can just kind of be chill, semi-retire or something. Like, I have no dreams or hopes of being like ultra ambitious or whatever. Like, I don't know, man. My whole perspective changed really. I just want to enjoy life. Of course, you need money to enjoy life, but I don't need to go for a lavish lifestyle to enjoy life. So that's the case. Hence, the $500 is enough. Yeah, but it's pretty good. Like $200. I think around early on, like 2020, 2021, I managed to invest about 10k in ready. Then I was getting about $100+. Then if you think about it, right, as much as it seems pretty small, and for those who are just looking for short-term huge profit earnings, I mean, it seems pretty small. But then for somebody that's risk averse and just don't want to give a shit about anything, I mean, come on, the money, it just sits there, you know, and you are earning extra money. Like, think about it. Like, I mean, that's the coolest thing, isn't it? The money just sits there, and then you get money from it. And it's like, you think about it, I'm getting about $400 a year, right? $400, right, can be used to buy a lot of things, you know. I can buy 400 divided by 5, I can buy 80 cups of Starbucks, right? 80 times 5, is it 400? Yeah, I can buy 80 cups of Starbucks. I can buy how many chicken rice? 200 packets of chicken rice, right? Like $2 chicken rice. So that's pretty cool. I mean, it's money, right, at the end of the day. But I think this is something that some of my friends are not very interested in. They just look for kind of short-term huge earnings. But of course, whatever floats their boat. I mean, for me, I just don't want to care. I see like some of my friends invest in robo-advisory. The part is like something that I'm not very sure of. I have huge concerns of the company's longevity. I'm quite sure some of your friends will be investing with a robo advisor, right? And they are like, they are registered under MAS, I suppose. But then the biggest question I always have is, in case, right, if the robo advisory just, I don't know, crashes, dies, disappears, or like, they don't have money to fund their operations, then what happens? Are you going to still be holding the stock? Because they are the one holding the stock, right? They're holding the funds for you. Your money is all with them. Then does it get parked at somewhere else? Or does it get sold off? Okay, imagine it bankrupts, like the company bankrupts. They don't pay you first, right? Because, I mean, as a MAS, I mean, they hold the MAS license. So I suppose they have an X million amount of money to insure whatever the operations that is going on. But let's say if it crashes, if it bankrupts itself, then they are kind of like, they have responsibility to pay their stakeholders first, right? I don't think it's you. If I'm not wrong, I think one of my friends told me is that they will pay their stakeholders first. So whoever, like the stocks holder of the company, of that robo advisory, so they'll pay out to them first and everything, whatever not. Then they'll pay out to the rest of us. Those consumer, like we are buying with them. That's my understanding. So that's my biggest concern. It's like, where does the stock goes after that? And also, do they just sell the stock immediately? Then you are stuck in this position where the stock you want to hold for 10 years, then what, 3 years in, you sell it, you haven't even made any earnings. Then it kind of screws up your plan, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, the investment thing for me is I want to do it long term. I want to just have a safety net. I don't want it to be short-term profits, right? Because I have no interest in that. So that's the biggest issue. And I think my friend got asked them before, but I forgot what was the reply really. But they just gave the reply that, oh, we are MAS like approved, like licensed or something. But it still doesn't guarantee anything. Like you have that millions of fund to insure everything, but I mean, like, is that enough? And when your whatever crash, then where does it go? Whatever not. So I think it's too much uncertainty, and I don't want to think too much, and I don't want to do too much research, because it's a waste. I don't know, it feels like a waste of time for me. Hence, I just avoided robo-advisory, and I just went with like POSB DBS, because POSB DBS is there since forever. And then every Singaporean mother's father, son, daughter, whatever not, I mean, most of them are going to have their money in DBS and POSB, right? Then, in that sense, will the government let it crash? No. And it's doing so well with all the digital stuff, so it's highly unlikely. Then you have robo-advisory, which is just purely uncertain, right? Completely uncertain. And a lot of this robo-advisory and all these, like, not just robo-advisory, other kind of stock app where you can spend like $10-$20 to buy a stock or something. All these stock app, right? They are just, it's like investing for fun, that kind of situation where you see all the rates that they charge you, right? The fees that they charge you. Maybe upfront is all cheap and all, and then the cost to entry is very low. But then the problem is that their cost doesn't really incentivize you to hold long term. Because I got checked before where if you were to invest in a stock and you hold it over time, right, and you keep investing it, you keep buying more and more, when you cash out, right, it's gonna cost more than you buying the stock on a bank's trading platform. Because a lot of these new companies like Tiger or Moomoo or whatever not, right, or Scythe, they don't generally like incentivize you to hold long term. Like, they have very high costs when it comes to the more amounts you have, the percentage is going to charge more, right, at the end of the day. So if I'm not wrong, it's a percentage kind of charging. So if you plan to keep growing and keep investing more, then the percentage is going to eat you alive. Then you have other, like the local banks one, where I think it's more of a flat rate if I'm not wrong. And like overall, the cost is definitely lower. I think if you go and Google it, right, I think there's quite a fair bit of articles by all these local investments, like news sites, where they actually do a comparison between investing with a bank and then investing with this kind of new platform, so to speak, in the long run. That is for the long run thing. I'm only interested in the long run because I want a safety net, right? I want to retire. Yeah, I mean, it's not just the ETF that I'm trying to bank on. I'm also trying to do all this content stuff to have a second income where I can combine all of these things together. Then I can not just get $500 per month, I can at least get 1k, 2k. Then maybe after that, I can just semi-retire, work at some jobs to do, I don't know, work at cafe, do some arts and crafts thing. I don't know, I really enjoy doing, I don't know, you know D&T in secondary school? I really enjoyed those very hands-on stuff, making things, maybe making furniture, making leather, a notebook or something. That seems interesting. Then I also have, speaking about robo-advisory, I also have friends that invested in crypto, which is very interesting. I have this guy friend. He comes from a very, I wouldn't say very rich. He just I suppose middle high income or something. I mean, they live in condo, and the parents don't expect him to give them any money. The parents pay for everything already. I don't think he has a personal car, so it's not that kind of rich where he has a personal car. So it's just not too bad. I mean, no responsibilities whatsoever. So I mean, he worked for quite a while already, then he has so much money, right? Then he go and invest in crypto. Then he go and read up on it. Then, don't know, he just seems to be very convinced that crypto is going to earn money. So during the 2018, if y'all didn't know, where crypto had a massive spike where everybody is starting to buy crypto, wow, very cool, very cool. Then I think he invested like quite a fair bit of money, like several K. Then And he bought in at his peak, you know, which is ridiculous. And then he sold it. And he sold it at a loss, which is unfortunate. If you think about it now, right, even if he has bought in at the peak, right, if he hold it until now, during this recent spike, this COVID-19 spike, right, he would have sold it at a profit, you know, because apparently all these Bitcoin, Ethereum, they spike even higher. It's crazy. I don't know how does it work, but it spiked even higher. Then he sold that right in 2018. He bought it and sold it. Then now again he bought in again, which is absolutely ridiculous. And now he's working, alright. And he's putting in more and more. And he got no, I don't know, responsibilities. So he can lose all this money and it's fine. Which is, I mean, good for him. Like, I wish I can be in that kind of situation where I can don't care, where I can just invest and not care. Because I feel that one of the things about like how the rich became richer is they have a lot of like, I don't know, how do I describe it? It's like fuck you money that, it's not really fuck you money, it's like a money that, like toilet paper money, like I don't need to care about it. It's just chump change. Then they can just throw into these random high risk, high reward assets. And then sometimes it just blows up. That they can earn so much money from it, which is insane. They have they already have a comfortable foundation already, alright. So they can do this kind of stuff. But then as a very poor person, you can't really do that, right? You only go for very safe things. But I don't know, man. It's unfortunate. But it seems fun. But I'm not knowledgeable enough to know how to invest in it. I did invest in Ethereum very, very early on, which is not very, very, very early to the extent where I'm a millionaire now. I managed to invest around, you know, like the 2018 peak, right? Just before it hits the peak, when the news kind of just started permeating, where crypto seems to be getting more and more popular. Then I managed to kind of like, you know, it kind of piqued my interest. And I thought, why not? I mean, it's around 2018 where I start thinking about investment also. Then I just think, maybe I should just spend $200 and buy a bit of Ethereum and see how it goes. And I just bought it. Then it was nice. During the 2018 peak, it managed to grow to $400. But then at that point, I just, to be honest, I was so very lazy to kind of realize my earnings, right, to sell it away. I just didn't give a shit. I just left it there forever, since forever. Then now the COVID-19 thing spiked. Then I checked, wow, it's insane, man. It spiked even higher, you know. So previously the highest was 400. Then now my 200 that I put in, right, is earning, it has become $800, you know. $800, like what the heck. But then what is ridiculous is that it's so uncertain and so risky, because I see the wallet, right, I see the pricing every day, right, it jumps up and down $50, you know. $50, $100 down, $50 up, $100 down. Then it's like, it's not stable. When they say about using it as a currency, as a day of like daily currency to buy things, right, it doesn't make sense at all, because it just jumps like crazy, which is ridiculous. But it's interesting, like it grows so much, but I haven't sold it yet. I don't know when I have to sell it. I mean, once I start talking about selling it, right, I get a bit stressful. Like, should I sell it now or should I sell it for, maybe there's a bigger wave. Now this is the second big wave, right? Maybe there's a third wave. Now you have the NFT hype. Then maybe there's a third wave that goes even higher. You never know. Then I think when I was going for my reservist, then there's a crypto trader. I think I mentioned in the previous podcast. I got talked to some of the guys there. Some finance guy that worked at MAS as well. So apparently the crypto trader and the MAS guy, we were all in the same team, which is really funny. Then I think the MAS guy also got invest a bit. Then he talked about how the crypto thing seems to mimic your early days, like web.com boom, where, you know, all this hype is fueling it. Then eventually it keeps going up, right? Then it will just crash where, I don't know, if people just recognize that it's stupid, it doesn't make sense, then people start selling it, then it will crash. So I'm also assuming that will be the case. So the question now is whether should I even sell it now? I should maybe wait for the really the true peak. Then when it crashes, then I probably I will buy in. Instead of buying in now, which is at an all-time high, which is ridiculous. Then, you know, you rather buy it at it's very cheap, right? Then when you buy it at very cheap, then you just hold it. Then you hold it for several years. Because to me, I'm not interested in short-term profit. It's like, if I mean, this is such a good example, you know, about holding things for long-term. And of course, it's a very cherry-picked kind of thing. People could hold the thing at long-term and still lose money. But think about it, it's like, I hold it and I get $800 now. So, I mean, assuming if you look at all these crypto stuff, I'm not well-read at all at this. I have never read a single crypto article. I just see the price. That's why I just see Reddit, see what people say. It's like, there's really an ecosystem around it. There's some sort of usage, I suppose. So there's still some value in it, right? But the amount of value and the real-world impact, right, it's not enough to justify the cost. Which is absolutely ridiculous. Everything now is just like, I suppose it's the assets that cost a lot, right? It's like some sort of investment assets that makes the price go crazy, like the crypto prices. But eventually people are going to realize that these assets are just, I don't know, these digital assets doesn't make sense. It's not real. I don't know. I feel that, I mean, there's a good chance that it might crash. Then when it crashes, then I think it's a good time to buy in for me. That's my logic. It's like, I mean, when the price is very low, then I buy in. I mean, because there's still some use cases, right? Because of all these blockchain technology and smart contract stuff where, I mean, there's still some users out there, then probably that's a good time to buy and just hold forever. And maybe if it ever goes back up again when there's more use cases being developed where there's a higher scrutiny because of all these kind of crashes, then there'll be more demand for actual use cases that are relevant to the real world. Even though, I mean, people are creating use cases that are relevant to the real world, but there will be tougher criteria and higher barriers to jump over. And then products, I would assume, will be stronger, will be better. Companies that deals with crypto will be, doing something more relevant and more useful, I suppose. But this is just my food for thought, I suppose. But I'm not an expert lah. Everything is just gambling at this point, I feel. But I'm not gonna put everything here. Like, my plan is to put about 5% or even lesser than that. So I have about 1k, 2k in, then I just leave it as that. Then I just don't touch it. Then wait until the end. Because 1k, 2k in my whole lifetime, right? It's not much, alright. I just gonna put it in. Then if it goes up, if it spikes, then it's good, then I sell. Yeah. Then I don't get too caught up with the whole when to sell, when to not sell. I'm just gonna if it goes to the point where I think it's worth selling, then I sell though. Then maybe it can go towards my house. But that's a bit wishful thinking because it hasn't reached that level yet. And we shall see. Oh, I can't believe I talked for so long really. But hopefully this is useful for y'all. I don't think this is financial advice at all because, I mean, I'm not an expert. This is just what I'm doing. I suppose the biggest takeaway from this is that to know that it's important to think about how you're going to invest your money and go and do some reading up. Yeah, so that's that. I guess I see y'all next time. Hopefully this was useful. This is if y'all got anything to share, y'all can always email me at I think Chillax Singapore Podcast or Chillax Podcast. Oh shit, I forgot what's the email already. How can that be? You can email me at Chillax Singapore Podcast at gmail.com. Yep. So thank you all and I will see y'all next time.